This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. It is a Friday, the 30th of September, and this is what we've been covering. Going to jump straight into some breaking news that happened actually during the show. Bajil Holdings, the hospital company in Abu Dhabi, they announced the pricing for their IPO. We're going to give you all the details of that and we'll hear from the boss, Shamshir Vialal. What else? DHL Express, rising prices across the world, across the UAE. The parcel company is putting up its prices by 6.5% in the UAE. And very sportingly, Jeff Walsh, the local boss, came into the studio to explain why. You're going to enjoy that interview. Very candid. What else can we tell you? Prices of air tickets are rising as well. So we've been speaking to the aviation lawyer, Nick Humphrey. That interview coming up. And then the UAE is the most powerful country brand in the world at the moment. How do we know that? Well, the guys at Brand Finance have crunched the numbers and the UAE came at the top of that index. Andrew Campbell of Brand Finance joined us in the studio to explain how they came to this conclusion and talk to us through some of the reasons and indeed some of the big companies in the UAE like Etisalat, Emirates NBD that also do well. All that to come. First up though, let's dive straight into our top business stories.
You are listening to The Business Breakfast, and we are looking at some of the big stories of the day. Biggest of the lot, well, certainly one that's been talked about around a number of the water coolers and coffee breaks this morning, is how did you do yesterday? How did you do yesterday? How did you do yesterday? Why? What happened? Sally, it's gone live.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, the bell rung at 10 a.m. yesterday morning and the punters were having it. The share price shot up in early trade from 2 dirhams to 2 dirhams 41. That's a 21% increase, which is quite a pop for an IPO. It did calm down a little bit later in the day, closing at 2 dirhams 21. Still a good day, 11% higher. Should we hear from the boss, the chairman, who was at the bell ringing ceremony yesterday? He's Matta Altaya. This was him speaking with the help of an orchestra about the Salik IPO.
The listing of Salik on the Dubai financial market today is a milestone in implementing the privatization scheme directed by His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President, Prime Minister, ruler of Dubai. In addition to doubling the total volume of the stock market to 3 trillion dirham and attracting strategic investments. The overall subscription of Salik Company reflects the strong confidence in Dubai financial markets and its ambition in achieving further growth. In addition to Salik's strong and agile business model with a low operational and capital expenditure.
Next week on Downton Abbey.
Well, next week is Bajil.
How is it?
Because breaking news has dropped within the past half an hour. That word again, drop. We love it. Bit of teenage jargon. Bajil, the Abu Dhabi hospital brand, is shaking her head. We've got teenage kids. What are we going to do? This is the language we speak.
It's not going down in the production. Not going down well in the production suite at the moment, as well.
Okay, within the past half an hour, there has been an announcement, a disclosure to the Abu Dhabi Stock Exchange about Bajil Holdings. Yeah. Is that better?
A notification.
Exactly.
Investors have been notified to gather in the Garrick Club at 8:58 for an announcement at 9.
Bajil. Abu Dhabi Hospital Company, they're having an IPO at the moment. Within the past half an hour, they've announced the price. So in terms of share price, 2 to 245 dirhams. That's their range. So they're going to do the book building. Remember, Salik didn't do book building. They just said, it's 2 dirhams, take it or leave it. Diwa and TCOM did do book building. So Bajil has gone with book building.
We've been watching what it means for retail investors, particularly with Salik, which I think is one of the reasons that Salik did what it did in being very upfront about the price, as you like, sticking a sticker in the window. Because they wanted to sort of, you know, share the wealth, share the growth with the population here. But it's just been pointed out to me that maybe, as well as just looking at the retail investors, we should be looking, which is our audience, looking at the foreign investors as well. Because this move to list a lot more of these assets in Dubai and down the road in Abu Dhabi It accomplishes a number of things. There's a number of reasons that it's going on. It raises funds. It keeps expat money, hopefully, in the country instead of you investing it at home. It deepens the market. More liquidity in one stock is liquidity that's good across the market for everybody. There's more movement. It's easier to get in and out. You're more likely. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot going on with it. But one of the things maybe that we haven't looked at enough is the increase in interest for foreign investors in terms of getting the big banks and all the rest of it to look at our shares here. And it's just been pointed out to me, and I'm not the one who did the maths on this. So just under 25% of SALIC was offered. 8.4% of that, so around a third of the shares that were offered, so 8.4% of SALIC as a whole, if you're following me, about a third of the shares that were up for grabs, were allocated to foreign investors, which means that foreign uptake in our capital markets and foreign interest in our capital markets is another thing that's increasing. And that's important because then you end up in, well, we're already in pension funds, but you know, you end up on ETFs and all sorts of easier ways for people to buy in.
I think you are dead right. Of course you're dead right. Okay, but here's my question. I think in 15, 20 years' time, if we're still presenting the Business Breakfast, hopefully there's some newer, younger, better people doing it by then, they'll look back on this period saying that was really significant for the development of UAE capital markets, what happened in 2021, 2022, 2023. This period, history, I think, will show in a couple of decades was a game changer for UAE capital markets.
This is the capital markets moment. This is their World Cup, to use our overused phrase.
And you don't need a PCR test.
You're living through history, Richard Dean.
Let's hear from Dr. Shamshir Vialal. He's the boss of Burjil Holdings. They are the next cab off the rank in terms of their IPO. Book building process starts today. You can subscribe between 2 and 2.45 dirhams a share. We don't know yet. We'll find out next week. He joined us in the studio a couple of days ago to talk about the IPO of the hospital company that he founded back in 2007 and is now valued at up to $3.3 billion, not dirhams, dollars. We asked him, why would you give it away? Because you're making money and you're doing really, really well. How do you give good value healthcare as a provider like Burjil when you have shareholders who want higher and higher returns?
It's all about your intention of what you are existing for. Our main purpose was to solve the problems that, you know, the healthcare was facing at that point of time. Even during COVID, people couldn't travel. That was the time when we opened Burjil Medical City, which was focused on oncology, pediatrics, trauma.
And that's in Abu Dhabi?
That's all in Abu Dhabi. 400 beds, Burjil Medical City in Abu Dhabi. So we have designed the product not just for Abu Dhabi. We have designed the product for the whole region. And if you look at healthcare investments in the last 5 years, not much has gone into new infrastructures. And when COVID came, every eyeball moved to COVID. So now that COVID, now we are thankful to the leadership where masks are out. We see that other waves are receding. So we have designed a product that can be of use, not just for Abu Dhabi. So I don't think for profit, as long as we are not greedy for profits, that is where it will help the organizations.
Shamshir Vialal of Burjil Holdings. The IPO is live right now. If you want to hear that full interview with him, if you're thinking about investing, go to the Bite Size Business Breakfast podcast for Wednesday, because that's when he was here.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
In our headlines this morning, DHL Express announcing price adjustments that are going to come into play at the start of next year, January the 1st, with an average increase for its services in the UAE of 6.5%. Very pleased to have in the studio this morning the DHL Express UAE country manager, Jeff Walsh. Jeff, it's lovely to see you. Thanks
Good
for
morning,
coming
Brandy.
In. Why are you putting prices up?
We put prices up annually. So every year we have a general price increase. Normally averages around 5%. We've seen a slight increase going into next year because of the turbulence of the market, the infrastructure, the investments we need to make. And I think everybody's seeing that. We're an international company at the end of the day that send our shipments cross-border. So we're affected by what's happening in the aviation industry.
Let's drill down into that a little bit more. Which of your costs in particular are going up?
Our costs in general are going up across the board. So, and we use a lot of commercial aircraft. We have our own airline, so we are an airline ourselves. So we're impacted the same as all the airlines, whether it be Emirates, Etihad. Then we use a lot of commercial uplift. So by using the commercial uplift, we have to take those prices on board as well.
And when you say investments coming into this as well, what are you doing?
We're moving in DWC. So DWC has become a great hub for e-commerce, very similar to DCC. You know, the UAE is really investing heavily in that way. So we need to keep up and ahead of the curve with that. So we're moving to a new facility in Dubai World Central, 8,000 square meters. And that's only within 1 year. So we're having to move facilities already because of the growth of the e-commerce in the last 2 years.
So the 6.5% rise on your services in average, does that mean that some services, some routes will be more?
It will be spread across around 6.5. It will depend on what we're seeing with different routes. You mentioned earlier on the show how it's changed in different parts of the world, the price increase, and that's dependent on things. So China's been a big impact on us. So depending on your trading lanes in which country you're in, you'll tend to be hit more than others sometimes.
Does the strong dollar not protect us from some of this?
The strong dollar does help us somewhat at the moment, but at the same time, people wanting to buy from the UAE, if they're buying from Europe, it can impact them. So if they are still able to sell in that market, they need a great service. So we need to make sure that we can deliver a reliable, sustainable service with 1 to 2 and 3 days for our customers so they can still be competitive.
I had a little look around to see how you're raising prices in other regions. India 8%, Philippines 7.9%. So we're actually a little bit lower. Why are those regions higher?
It depends how they're impacted. As I said, there can be local costs, there can be inflation within those countries that impact the working staff. We're very heavy. So we are the 11th largest employer in the world as DPDHL with over 500,000 employees. So depending where you have a bigger market and a bigger workforce, that can be impacted accordingly.
What's it going to mean for your customers that have corporate accounts? What are they going to see?
They'll be very similar again. So it's right across the board. It's no different to what they're all doing. So we're very open and upfront and honest. I was meeting customers yesterday. We're discussing the same things. Everybody understands what's out there and how we can give a service. So for us, we're also investing heavily. So a lot of our multinational customers and also our SMEs, they're very, very interested in sustainability. So what we're doing is we are actually investing way ahead of the curve on this. So we've committed as DPDHL to invest 7 billion euros between now and 2030 to reduce our carbon footprint.
You say it's what your customers are doing, which is putting their prices up at the moment. Is there a chance here for companies to raise prices in the name of inflation to do things that they need to do, like invest, etc., and assume that those prices rises will just be taken as a given because stuff's going up?
Industry to industry will be different, depending on what they've got and what forces are impacting them externally and across the globe and where they're trading. You know, if they're trading locally, are they trading globally? How that will impact them will be slightly different. Because we are moving shipments across the world, we're in that turbulence. So for us, even the Russia-Ukraine impact and rerouting aircraft, making different options, China closing down states at a time. So to be able to contain with that and move shipments around still, we need to look at those different markets and how we can make that happen.
Are you worried about losing business?
We have around 56% market share at the moment, and I think we will maintain, if not grow that, because our customers need that service. The UAE has been built about making this a great logistics hub. So by being here in the Middle East, we can service Asia, Africa, Europe, the US. And to do that, all the customers here need an edge on their competitors around the world. So by investing in our airlines and what we're doing, it allows them to remain competitive.
How much of that 6.5% price rise is actually costs and inflation?
It's dependent on where you are and what you're doing. So again, it's how we work that. So we're managing cost and managing routes. So through our sustainability projects, we're actually looking at how we use route optimization for our first and last mile by being leaner in the way that we do that. So we're talking to our customers about being the first to market. So I've later pick up early collection, but doing that in a sustainable way.
I guess what I'm asking by that is how much of that 6.5% do you have to put up and how much are you choosing to put up?
I think we have to put up 6.5%. It's to keep the business going. As I said, we do an annual increase every year. And the way the market's gone with inflations across the globe and different changes across the globe, it's only a slight increase over the previous years. So we've tried to keep it in the most, how can I put it? We've tried to make that more attractive for people understanding whilst we're doing that. So we'd be very open in why we're doing it and what we're doing and how we're going to reinvest so that they will see a better service. And I keep coming back to it, but sustainability, we've talked about it so long and you do on this show. Sustainability is not cheap. If you really want to change the world and you want to do something, you have to invest. We've just flown our first electric aircraft on Monday in the US. That's a massive change. This is things that people thought would never happen. So we now have an electric aircraft. We purchased 12 of them. They will go into our market in the US next year.
What are you seeing in demand for your services at the moment? I had a look through the FedEx results that came out last Thursday. They've seen shipping drop volumes drop in the last quarter. They are parking planes. They're reducing flight frequencies because people are sending less stuff. What have you seen happen to demand here?
The dynamics of the market have changed, absolutely. 2021, during COVID, we saw the big boom of e-commerce. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was buying from home. Now we're seeing a difference in that. So we're seeing a slight decline in shipments.
What's a slight decline? Give me a percentage.
For us here, we're around 9-10%.
Down.
Okay, down on shipments, but we're seeing an increase on weight. So we're seeing a growth on weight. So the market's changing where we saw a growth in e-commerce, the B2C, as you'd call it. Now we're seeing the B2B bounce back, which is great news for everybody. That's great news for the UAE, for us and our customers. So it means the businesses are starting to thrive again and grow off the back of COVID.
But less packages, less things being sent around overall.
Less packages, yes. And I think that's common right across the globe. And we're seeing that right everywhere in every market.
What does that tell you about the economy? What's your gut sense about those numbers?
We're seeing that change. I think the economy, you guys talk about it every day. We see it in every country. So when inflation in some countries is 5%, in others it's 9%, in others it's 10%, that's depending on what's happening in that market. So we've got markets that are booming. We've got markets that are quieting down. We've got markets that are level. Being a global player means you have to look at every market and how you can sustain that and have your network.
But the 9-10%, that's the UAE?
Yes.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. How does that compare, by the way, to what you're seeing globally? 20 seconds.
It's pretty much
seconds.
A similar trend. It's pretty much a similar trend. With ups and downs, we're levelling out around that.
DHL Express UAE country manager Jeff Walsh in the studio with us this morning, talking us through those price rises, 6.5% for their services, which will kick in on the 1st of January. Thank you for your time.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And rounding out a week, we've been talking about the cost of getting things, parcels, people from A to B. Airline tickets are up 25% in the last year. That's their biggest annual jump since 1989. Throw some currency fluctuations into the mix. And what does it all mean for particularly long-haul flights that airlines are trying to bring back? We're joined all the way from Australia this morning, suited and booted, by Nick Humphrey, who leads the law firm Norton White's Aviation, Transport and Trade Practice here in the Middle East. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Brandy. Oh, good afternoon for me, Brandy. How are you?
Good afternoon for you. Exactly. So we are going to talk ultra long-haul flight, which a number of airlines down your way, my way, technically, are looking to bring back. But at a time when, if you want to fly economy to New Zealand beginning of December, it'll cost you sort of 10,500 dirhams, 34 if you want a comfy seat. What's the appetite for that?
It seems there's a lot of appetite continuing, and I guess it's this term pent-up demand, where I guess those past 2 years we're sitting, saving our dollars, not able to travel. So that seems to not be inhibiting people's desire and demand for long-haul travel. Interestingly, Qantas has a flight that's going from Sydney, Perth to Rome, and its load factor has been 99%, which is incredible, which shows there's an insatiable desire to travel and travel to Europe. Now, currency is one of those elements that, you know, I guess for Brandy, for you and I alike, you know, over the years, our currency's always been a bit of a challenge. And when we go on those long haul travels, we always know we're going to be paying a bit more. There's still resource constraints. There's still an inability to put new aircraft on these routes. And the load capacities are high and people are paying even higher ticket prices. And at the same time, you know, Qantas is looking at its Project Sunrise, where it's looking to fly direct from Sydney to London and Sydney to New York. So there is still a desire there, notwithstanding these economic uncertain times.
When that pent-up demand runs out, though, when everyone has gone and seen grandma, grandpa, whoever, what happens then?
When that dissipates, I mean, we're going into a bit of a perfect storm, aren't we? But there's also a consumer market that has a massive amount of pent-up demand which hasn't been released to the masses yet, and that's the Chinese travelling public. Which is very important, you know, for the Middle East market, for the European market. So it will be an interesting time as certain markets wane once certain pandemic restrictions ease in China. Will the travelling Chinese public have that, you know, desire to spend? Look, at the same time, you've got, you know, on currency, there's a headline about the Australian dollar doing so well versus everyone else. All the Australians are going to travel everywhere. But with this currency issue, fuel prices is going up, costs for airlines, which are a lot of costs, the price in US dollars are going up. So there's going to be a flex point with passengers. And typically it'll be the premium travel. So you look at Emirates, for example, I think their forward-looking plan of having a lot more premium economy seats is a real way forward. Will someone who otherwise flew business now fly premium economy? That will be the contrast. But, you know, I'd like to be Nostradamus, you know me on this show, Brenny, I'm always cynical about the future. I think we've got some rocky times in aviation continuing.
Talk to us about those expenses that airlines face, Nick, because jet fuel's actually been coming down, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's an interesting. So over the past month or two, jet prices have gone down, ranging between 15 and 20%. Year on year, they're still up. And year on year, in some regions, they're up by 30 or 40%. But as, you know, whilst there's been that change, there's also, if we've seen, for example, in South Africa, and there's reports in the US of supply shortages in jet fuel. So you've got at the one time, oil's going down, jet fuel goes down a little bit. Now there's supply issues. It's going to go up again. So you've got airlines who are doing their hedging, forward planning, really. So, you know, you're booking a ticket today for maybe traveling in 3 months' time. What's the expectation? Fuel prices are going to be higher. So it's a bit of a and look, people are paying the prices. Well, airlines have got limited flights on some routes and they're filling it. You know, how do they cover that? They elasticity demand having a higher price and people are still paying it.
People are still paying it. Our business is still paying it, though. We were speaking to an events expert a little bit earlier this week who said corporate budget for travel was shrinking because of those currency differentiations and the higher travel costs.
Yeah, look, you know, I guess from my experience, there's been, post-pandemic, a lot of companies looked at their balance sheet for marketing and business development spend and said, hey, look what you achieved over this 2 years of not traveling. We now need to slash your budgets. So there's that in itself is a bit of a challenge. Look, at the same time, you've got new routes being announced coming out of the UAE. So there's still, you know, it's we're in this world of contradiction. Some jurisdictions are saying, you know, there's high demand. Others are saying there's challenges. The entertainment space, the UAE, the load capacity in the hotels is high. So there's, if you read the headlines every day, there's probably five contrary articles beating the other articles. But, you know, we're in a mad time at the moment.
30 seconds left with you, Nick. So very quickly, one of those headlines. Are the high prices here to stay? Is the era of cheap travel over?
High prices are here to stay whilst oil price uncertainty continues, as it accounts for at sometimes a third and even more of the airline's costs. And whilst there's global uncertainty, it leads to higher fuel prices. We're going to be paying more.
Nick Humphrey speaking to us from Australia this morning. He leads Norton White's aviation, transport and trade practice. Lovely to speak to you again.
Nick, where's the U2 poster?
Just a little aircraft today, sorry. I look very legal. I thought I'd put some law books behind me.
Good to see you, Nick. Catch up very soon. A big thanks to Nick Humphries.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about brands. Let's talk about global brands, because the UAE has ranked the highest globally among countries in 2022 in terms of brand performance. That's according to the guys at Brand Finance. Joining us in the studio now, I'm delighted to say, is the managing director of that organisation, Brand Finance for the Middle East, Andrew Campbell. Andrew, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
So when we say the UAE is the best in the world in terms of brand performance, in layman's terms, what do we mean?
So every year we do a ranking of nation brands amongst other rankings. The nation brand ranking is based on our Global Soft Power Index, which we do annually, and that's a survey of 100,000 respondents globally. We ask them questions about their perception of 120 countries, and that forms the heart of the strength of nation brands, which we then apply to the forecast of GDP to derive a nation brand value. UAE has performed top globally in the brand performance, which is one of the ingredients of the brand strength. The other ingredients are how much does a nation invest in their nation brand? And we derive that from a whole range of statistics from the World Bank, OECD, IMF, etc. And the perceptions come from our soft power index, and the performance is based on statistics on investment, trade, tourism, and the economy.
So very simply, so the UAE is the top brand in terms of performance in 2022, but it's not the most valuable brand in the world. That is still the US, China, and Germany in the top three positions. So again, in simple terms, what's the difference between the top performer and being the most valuable nation brand?
Right. So the value is significantly driven by size of the economy. So the US has a GDP way in excess of most of the others, followed by China. The UAE is a very strong brand in terms of the strength of the brand. It ranks 11th globally. However, in terms of value, it ranks 17th, simply because although it's very strong and has invested significantly in its brand and it's perceived really highly, because of its relative size, it's not amongst the top 10 valuable brands.
But so it is 10 million people versus 1.5 billion
absolutely,
in China.
Absolutely.
Not a fair fight.
Absolutely.
Is it fair to say that the UAE is punching above its weight in terms of its global brand?
Yes, absolutely.
And why do you think that is? What is the UAE getting right?
So the UAE has invested over the years very significantly in its positioning. We've seen over the past few years coming out of COVID, and this has contributed to it being the best brand performance, the way that COVID was handled, the way that reacted very quickly to the vaccine regime that was implemented, opening the economy decisively and faster than most coming out of COVID, and generally stimulating the economy very effectively in the post-COVID period. So all of those have contributed to it being the highest performer in terms of brand performance coming out of COVID.
Cynic, the Business Breakfast listener is a cynical sort, many of them are, and they'll be listening to this and going, oh, well, has the UAE just paid to be at the top of this list? Does anyone pay to be at the top of your lists?
Absolutely not. We're a professional consultancy. All of the inputs into our studies are derived from globally acknowledged sources. So our information is pulled in from a range of sources, and the results fall where they do. It's just a fact that the UAE performs really well on a range of measures. You know, we look at the Global Innovation Index, which is published by the United Nations. We look at World Bank reports, IMF reports, and we consolidate those and build an overall view of nation strength. And the UAE simply outperforms many of its peers.
Let's look a bit more deeply into some of the companies here in the UAE, which are part of this process. Because as well as Brand Finance looking at countries and ranking them, you also look at companies. And I'm looking at your most recent 2022 report for the Middle East. Saudi Arabia and the UAE dominant. Saudi Arabia in particular. Saudi Aramco, massive, world's biggest listed company, depending what day of the week it is. But three here in the UAE, or four here in the UAE, make the list. ADNOC, again, big oil company, so we'll leave that aside. But you've got Etisalat, where you used to work, Emirates, and the bank, Emirates NBD. What are those three doing? You know, the three E's, Etisalat, Emirates Airline, and Emirates NBD Bank.
So Etisalat, by its size, does generally perform really well. Etisalat researches really well in terms of perceptions of the brand amongst the audience. We do our own proprietary research every year into how people perceive brands. Etisalat does research really well. People do respect it highly and trust it. Emirates, again, globally, it's a global brand. It's seen around the world. as an airline, it ranks with all the other major airlines globally. Emirates NBD has done exceptionally well, positioning itself within the UAE community.
And it's interesting that Emirates NBD is ahead of FAB. The biggest bank of the country is FAB in Abu Dhabi. Now, I was looking at your stats, and the margins are wafer thin between Emirates NBD and FAB. But what's the differentiator between two very large, successful banks, and what puts Emirates NBD, the slightly smaller bank, ahead of FAB?
That's a really interesting question. And we've been tracking these banks for many years. And Emirates NBD is a very solid performer. What's interesting is the way that FAB is developing. If you recall, it was the outcome of a merger about 6 years ago between First Gulf Bank and Abu Dhabi Bank. And that merger took some time to gel and to settle. They are starting to motor now, and it'll be interesting to see over the coming years how that relationship, that ranking develops between Emirates NBD and FAB, and also how they stack up relative to regional peers. You know, there's Qatar National Bank is a very strong brand, SNB in Saudi Arabia, again, the result of a merger between two banks, also one to watch going forward. So the banking brand picture is going to be really interesting over the next period.
Look forward to watching that one. Appreciate your time this morning. That's the voice of Andrew Campbell. He's the Managing Director of Brand Finance Middle East. Just to recap, the UAE, the best performing global brand in the world in 2022.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.